Today we are continuing into our James series. We're wrapping up James chapter 4. And before we jump into the last part of James chapter 4, I was thinking through what we're teaching today, and I thought it was interesting that Jesus, when he teaches us, he taught us that we are going to know a tree by its fruit, right? We're going to know a tree by its fruit, and you know what's on the inside of a person by what comes out of their mouth. Luke chapter 6, verse 45 says this. It says, a good person produces good things from the treasury of a good heart, and an evil person produces evil things from the treasury of an evil heart. What you say flows from what is in your heart. So what would the application of this verse be? To clean up our language? No. Because that doesn't change the inside, right? We must recognize that our language determines what's in the heart. And if our language overflows with what's inside, we need to work on changing the inside, letting the Lord change the inside, so that what comes out of the mouth is cleaned up. That's Jesus' teaching. It's interesting because it's really like a cause and effect. The cause is what's stirring in the heart. The effect is what comes out of the mouth. And it's honestly, if we try to change what comes out of our mouth without trying to change the heart, we're really living a life of religion. We're trying to do the good thing to prove our way, prove our work, to prove to be good enough to God or whoever else. And when we do that, that is not what God has called us to do. He doesn't call us to clean ourselves up, then approach God. He says, approach God, and he will clean us up from the inside out. You see, Jesus broke that whole concept of doing in order to make yourself right. He changed that. He broke that all up. In Matthew chapter 6, he says murder starts in the heart, right? He says that adultery starts in the heart. And so we need to work on what's in the heart and let the Lord work on what's in the heart before we start going and changing what comes out of the mouth. Now, I say all of that because as we jump into James, the end of chapter 4, verses 13 through 17, James continues to talk about what comes out of our mouth needs to be recognized that it's not always good. And we need to be considering what's coming out because of what's inside. He reinforces the fact that our words ought to not be used lightly. So we'll read verses 13 and 14. Look here, you who say, today or tomorrow we're going to a certain town and we'll stay there a year. We'll do business there and make a profit. How do you know that what your life will be like tomorrow? Your life is like the morning fog. It's here a little while, and then it's gone. We have to be careful about what we use our words to say, and James is saying that here's something we need to be careful of. In the past, when we've read through James, there's several instances where James is telling us we need to be careful about what we say. Some examples, we need to be quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to become angry, right? There's something coming out of our mouths that he's like, we've got to adjust, something's got to be adjusted. Another example of using our language in an improper way, we claim to be religious, but we don't control our tongue. That means our religion is worthless. Another one, we claim to be a Jesus follower, but we show favoritism. So our words don't match our actions. We need to change our words so that they match our actions. Another one, you say you have faith, but you don't have works to support it. That means you have dead faith. Our words are not matching who we are. Another one, he says we must control our tongues. Another one, we must not be boastful or arrogant. Now, James, as we see, are talking to those who are making future plans as if it was up to them. Using our words really inappropriately, not considering the greater work of God in our lives. Does anybody here live by their calendar? Yeah? You have two calendars. Okay, do they match? They have their own function, right? They have their own function, right? Yeah, there's an element where we all do. We really all do. There are things that we have to do each day. There are things we have to do each week, each month, maybe even yearly. And those calendars help us keep that organized. So as I look at my calendar, Okay, here's an example of what's going on in my calendar as I thought through this. So tomorrow, Angie and I are heading down to Rochester because we have our district conference for 3 days. So that's our district, or our Christian and Missionary Alliance denomination has all the pastors get together for several things. So we're doing that for a few days. That's on my calendar. Thinking about my business, I have several jobs coming up for my business. I've got some windows to do. I've got a door to do. I've got some trusses to rebuild. That's just a handful of projects that I have coming up. And then I'm looking into November. November, I'm actually heading to Spain. I've been invited with some other pastors to go to this leadership development opportunity with our district superintendent, who's like the pastor of all the pastors, okay? He's like my boss. And so I get that opportunity with a few people. That's a couple weeks in November. And then December. I'm really looking forward to December because basketball season starts. I love watching the boys play basketball. Caleb, he's a starter on the Mora Mustang basketball varsity squad. So if you want to watch him outside of our church family here, you can see him on the court, and he's a lot of fun to watch. Levi as well. Basketball season is coming. I'm looking forward to that. December, we have Christmas. Our family loves Christmas. We really enjoy doing Christmas with the family. And then January, that's on the calendar. Something very special is coming up. My daughter Lily is getting married on the 3rd. Pretty big deal. Pretty amazing. We live by our calendar. My calendar is getting quite full. Is yours? You see, with that in mind and with what James is saying, do we need to stop making our plans for the future? Do we need to be like, I can't do that anymore because James is saying it's wrong? I don't think so. Some examples, some bigger examples that we can find through Scripture of why that's not necessarily the case. Proverbs 6:6 through 11. Let me read this for you. It says this. Ooh. Yeah, take a lesson from the ants, you lazy bones. Learn from their way and become wise. Though they have no prince or governor or ruler to make them work, they labor hard all summer gathering food for winter. But you, lazy bones, how long will you sleep? When will you wake up? A little extra sleep, a little more slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. Then poverty will pounce on you like a bandit. Scarcity will attack you like an armed robber. I think the author of that proverb is basically saying we need to plan for the future. We need to expect something happening in our lives. We can't just live for today, is what he's saying. Here's another proverb example in Proverbs 27, verse 1. Don't brag about tomorrow since you don't know what the day will bring. One says plan. The other one says, well, don't expect that to happen. Interesting. So confusing. It can be so confusing. Yeah.
We started our business. I read this and did, I don't know, should I or shouldn't I?
Yeah.
That went on for weeks.
Yeah, well, you notice too that this is Proverbs 27. We just read from Proverbs 6. So in the same book, we have one saying plan for the future. Another one that says be careful about planning too much, too far ahead. Or don't brag about what's going to happen tomorrow. We don't know what's going to happen. So here are some that's two examples. And one more example we won't read through. Maybe you want to read it this week. Genesis 41, 26 through 41. I have it right here. That is the story about Joseph being in Egypt. And there's a dream that's given to him that says, right now you're going to have a lot of, the country's going to have all this wealth of food. You're going to have so much grain and food, you won't even know what to do with it. But after that, there's 7 years of famine. So the goal is to store up what you can for these good years so that during the famine, people are fed and taken care of. So there's this element of planning that the Lord had given to Joseph, which then allowed them to manage through that, and Joseph was raised to a higher position. So read that if you want this week, and you'll see that yourself. But here we can see that if God was totally against us planning for the future, this wouldn't have made it into Scripture. So there's this dichotomy, like you're maybe feeling, do we plan or do we not plan? How does that work? And that's where we're going to get to today. Charles Spurgeon says this, There are two great certainties about things that shall come to pass. One is that God knows, and the other is that we do not know. Very true. Pretty simple, but profound, right? So then what do we do about the future plans? Is he really telling us? Is James telling us not to make future plans? Well, as we read in verse 15, we'll find out. It says this, "What you ought to say is, if the Lord wants us to, we'll live and do this or do that." Isn't that interesting? There's a caveat to our planning. And the caveat is us saying, you know, if he wants us to, that's what we'll do. Did Jesus follow this example? So this is a really good practice for you. When you see something in Scripture, especially something that kind of stirs like, really? Makes you think, really? It's really important to think through, does it say that through the rest of Scripture? Okay? So this statement of, if the Lord wants us to, we'll live this way or that way. Did Jesus exemplify that? That's exactly where I'm thinking. That's exactly where I'm thinking, when he was in the garden praying. Exactly. Luke 22, verse 42 says this. This is Jesus saying, "Father, if you are willing, please take this cup of suffering from me. It's coming. Yet, I want your will be done, not mine." Jesus knew that the next day, his death was imminent. It was coming. It was on the door. And if he wanted to, he could have changed that, right? He planned for that. As a matter of fact, he planned long ago for that cross to come. And he's like, "God, if you would take it from me, please. But not my will. Yours be done." He's saying, I can do something about this. I can change my future plans if I wanted to. But ultimately, I want your will to be done, not mine. You see, it states that his desire is not to bear the cross, but the final decision was up to God. Jesus, in this situation, he humbled his plans under the guidance of God. So I ask you and I ask us, how often do we make plans without considering God's role in them? How often do we put something on the calendar without thinking, "Lord, is this your will?" Or, "Lord, this is what I'm planning, but your will be done." When was the last time you did put something on your calendar expecting it to come to happen without considering that God may have other plans? Just about always, yeah. So sometimes we just kind of make our plans and just go for it, and we'll see what happens. The last time you made plans yet didn't necessarily say, "Lord, what are your plans?" Or, what is your goal?" Or, "Lord, this is what I'm planning, but I'm going to leave it up to you. Whether you keep those plans going or they change, I'm going to trust you." That's really where James is telling us to land. So when was the last time you can think of that you made plans yet found that God had other plans for you? How did you react in those circumstances? I can think of some in my life. We've had plenty of times where we've made our plans. This is what we're going to do. We're going to live in this house for this long, and that never happens, right? Or we got this big plan, the one and only plan that has come to fruition at this point that I would say, but I think a lot of it is, "Lord, your will be done." Is we said when we moved here, we're planning on staying here till all of our kids graduate, at least, maybe longer, who knows. But we've moved so many times that it's been really difficult for my kids to have a solid foundation of friendships and consistency, and we really felt like the Lord is wanting them to have some consistency in life. And I'm really grateful that we have. So God has really given us that opportunity. But again, we still are like, "Your will be done," because he's changed it plenty of times before. He can change it again. It's hard. It can be really hard. Why is it such a big deal that we shouldn't make plans without considering God's plan? Well, it's because verse 16, it says this. So I'll read 15 first. 15 says, "What you ought to say is, if the Lord wants us to, we will live and do this or do that." Verse 16, "Otherwise, you're boasting about your own plans, and all such boasting is evil." Don't necessarily think about that when we're making plans, do we? Yeah, we don't necessarily think about that. So here's where our words are revealing what is inside. What's inside is that I'm kind of in control of my future. I'm in control of my calendar. I'm in control of what's going to happen tomorrow or next week or next year. And when we make plans and expect them to come true and to fruition, just as we think, we're saying that we are the creators of our future. We're boasting that we have more power and control than we actually do. This is very boastful and a proud attitude in our hearts. And remember what James tells us happens to those who are proud. We find in verse chapter 4, verse 6, we just read it a couple weeks ago, that God opposes the proud but favors the humble. So when we make plans without acknowledging, Lord, you have the right to change them, we're saying, man, we got it. It's all about us. We're in control of our own future. And when we do that, our pride puts us up high. And God says that he actively opposes the proud. It's interesting. Who in their right mind would want God to actively oppose them? I don't want that. So when we're proud, he's opposing us. But when we're humble and saying, Lord, your will be done, he lifts us up. Nobody wants to be humbled by God because we're too proud. But that's exactly what we'll get when we make our plans without recognizing that God is in ultimate control. David Guzik, a commentator, says this, James does not discourage us from planning and doing, only from planning and doing apart from the reliance on God. There's a difference. Planning and doing apart from the reliance on God. We must rely on him and let him have the control of our future, of our plans. That's what James is teaching his people, and he's teaching us. And then verse 17 says this. Remember, it is a sin to know what you ought to do and then not do it. So there are two types of sins. Sins of commission, things you and I do actively. We lie or we steal or we cheat. That's an active sin. We're intentionally doing that. That's a sin of commission. But then there's the sin of omission, which James mentions here. The things we don't do but should. Tell partial truths. I'm going to tell you most of it, but I'm not going to tell you this other stuff. That's a sin of omission. Maybe if we're not caring for those who are in need, we're omitting ourselves from diving into something that's maybe messy. We're omitting ourselves from that. Maybe we're ignoring our family obligations. We have a role, something that we're expected to do, but we say, I'm not going to do that. I'm omitting myself from my responsibilities. Maybe even not forgiving others. Because we're told to forgive others, and if we refuse to, we are omitting ourselves from doing what God has called us to do. So James is saying that we sometimes commit sins of omission when we know what we ought to do, but we don't do it. That's a sin as well. This also includes planning for the future and not recognizing God in the matter. We plan for the future and expect the future to happen as we've put it in our calendar. And we don't say, Lord, it's up to you to make that decision. Then we're sinning. Again, David Guzik says this. James knows that it is far easier to think about and talk about humility and dependence on God than it is to live it. It's a lot easier to think about it and talk about it than it is to live it. And that's what One Degree Church is all about. We're all about helping you walk a little closer, not just know more, but actually apply it to your life so that your Monday through Saturday might be a little different, a little more like Jesus. David says this is going to be the hard part, is actually doing it. Because here's the thing, is that if we say, here's what I'm planning, even the stuff, you know, I've got this whatever tomorrow, our district conference tomorrow. Lord, this is what we're doing, what we're planning. We've got it all set up. But Lord, I'm going to let you dictate what happens. Something might happen and we've got to change our plans. If I do that and something happens and plans start to change, well, what happens inside of me? I think I'm a little less frustrated because, well, it wasn't mine to determine what my plan was. It was God's to determine, and he changed it. That was his choice. It's okay. But if I'm set in my ways, which I get that way. I get that way. And this is what I'm doing. This is what I'm planning. An example this morning. I didn't plan on saying this, but I think the Lord put that in my mind to humble me. So this morning, I wanted to watch the Vikings, right? And we don't have anything, any subscriptions or whatever, to watch it really nicely. And so I bought this antenna that's supposed to receive information from over 100 miles away. I'm like, that's what I need, okay? So I'm dangling this thing out my window. It's this little plastic thing. I've done this all last year and was able to manage through. Well, of course, today it wasn't going to work. I would get glitches and I could see part of the game. And the next thing I know, it comes on and now we're like losing 7-0. I'm like, I didn't even see it, you know? I'm all frustrated, just super frustrated. Because my plan when I got up this morning was I am going to watch the Vikings. Yeah, I fought God on that one. And so I bought a subscription so that I could watch the rest of it. Oh, man. Okay. It really was. I got the subscription right at halftime. So I'm like, oh, that was awesome. Okay, so that was my confession this evening. I did not expect that, but Lord, thank you for reminding me. So as we get to our application, we've read these last few verses, and we're thinking about our calendar and our plans and all this, and have we been giving it to the Lord, letting him make the decision? So if we start to make plans and are now including God into them, you realize that this might change something inside of you. It might change something inside of me. Where if I make these plans, even as silly as watching the Vikings game, I wonder, maybe I wouldn't have this subscription right now. If I were to say, Lord, okay, you must not want me to have that, or whatever, I let you jump into this, and for some reason you didn't want me to. I don't know. Maybe I didn't listen well enough. But, well, how would you know? Well, I think if I had a humble attitude, I would just be willing to submit to the fact it's not coming up. So I'm going to just trust that it's the Lord. So that's somewhat of it is trust. You just got to trust him. And I think that's what maybe I didn't even consider until now. Was that maybe the Lord was just saying, Jesse, I want you to not worry about it right now. Why? I don't know. I don't know. I may not ever know. But I think he might be asking me to submit to him in this way as well. But I think he's asking all of us that. In all things. Yeah, right, exactly. So I ask, what plans maybe, and this is a rhetorical question for you to consider. What plans have you made recently that you've not necessarily allowed the Lord's will into? What plans do you have tomorrow or next week that you're like, yeah, this is what I'm doing, but maybe haven't said, Lord, your will be done. And if you haven't, I'm going to ask you, how will you react if those plans change due to something outside of your control? What attitudes come to the surface? Maybe you can think of, like I just did, a recent change of plans that caused you discomfort. How would that attitude maybe have been different if I had submitted to his plan? Might have been his plan that I missed. But maybe you. So I ask, are you willing to say, Lord, your will be done? Are you willing to say that your will be done in my plans? And then how might this also change your plan making? But also, how might this change your plan changing? It's a good reminder for me, that's for sure, and I hope it's a good reminder for you.